Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Glad you could join us this week. A lot has changed in the last couple weeks, and as many of you are working from home and trying to navigate this new environment that we have, I want to encourage you that this is going to pass, but we need to be aware of what's going on and how that we can navigate. We've got a guest today, Jack Porter. He's going to share some thoughts about how to manage in this type of environment, and he's got some great insights. He has started 11 companies and has spent his career in Silicon Valley and the Bay Area for the last number of years. And he is currently CEO of an AI company, Cognizer, which he has successfully led into a new round of funding. And he is going to share some thoughts from his business experience and also share some things that he's doing. Is pretty innovative in the nonprofit area of helping others, and looking forward to our conversation with Jack. Well, Jack, it's great to connect with you today, and I know you're working from home like millions of other people around the U.S., and when we spoke a few weeks ago, things have changed a lot. Tell us a little bit about how you're dealing with it as in your company.
Well, you know, I think we got lucky on a number of fronts, and that my company started off virtual, so all of us already had that experience. We use Zoom all the time. I have half a bunch of my people, about 40 people in India and 10 people here in the U.S. And so I'm already used to talking on Zoom an awful lot, but gone through a round of financing. So as a company that's in its, we just completed our Series Seed investment, and it was a pretty large Series Seed investment. So, you know, I feel sorry for the companies that were trying to raise their Series Seed right now. And mm-hmm. So we've got 18 months worth of runway ahead of us. So that was really good. But, you know, I sent everybody home. We're all working from home, and I think we're going to make it through fine.
Good. Well, give us a little bit of your overview of your career. I've had a couple people that said, when I asked for suggestions of guests for the podcast, your name came up a couple of times from people that have known you over the years. And but tell us a little bit about your career and just some of the things that you've done.
Yeah. So I'm working on my 11th company. So I've been doing startups since I was 19. I like the front end part of it. So what I typically do is I'll do the first 5 years and get the company up to about 10, 20 million in revenue. And then I do either one of two things, just depending on where the market is at that time. I either sell the company at that point, or if the market's strong, I'll bring in a CEO and work with the investors to bring in a CEO and let them take it to the next level. But I like the innovation piece, and I like figuring out new technology. So I've always kind of focused on that. So mine is like every 5 years, I'm doing a new company. And just recognize it was one of those things where I'm passionate about that. I'm good at that. And a lot of people don't realize that, and they try to do something they're not good or not passionate about. And I, you know, growing a company from 20 million to 100 million, I find it interesting, but it's not me, you know, so I like that part of it. So been doing that. My current company is an artificial intelligence company. My last three companies have all been AI companies. Mm-hmm. And I love that space. All my companies were in the very advanced mathematics area. So we called those different things. If back in the 90s and 2000s, if you would have called your company an AI company, you'd never raise money. So it had different names as it went through, but, you know, always using math to predict an outcome of an important business process. So that's kind of been my career, and that's what I'm doing now.
And it's all been in the Bay Area. Is that right?
Always in the Bay Area. Yes. Okay. My first three companies, Kansas. I grew up in Kansas and I did my first three companies there. When I did my fourth company, I got funded by big venture firms, and they approached me and said, "We'll fund you, but you have to either move to Boulder, Colorado, Seattle, or San Francisco." And what they really meant was you have to move to San Francisco. I just wanted to make feel like I was but quite honestly, I got out to the Bay Area and I absolutely love it. I love the environment. I love the pace. You know, I love the fact that I can go 2 hours in almost any direction and be in a totally different ecosystem, you know, and my wife and I are both very much outdoors persons. So we do that a lot.
Okay. Well, tell me a little bit when you first came to the Bay Area. I've talked to others and have a number of connections out in that market. Talk a little bit about what it was like when you first arrived and what was going on.
Well, I moved to Pleasanton. So Pleasanton's a neat little town on the East Bay. Reminds me a lot of a Midwestern town. Mm-hmm. And so I moved there and, you know, I immediately connected. It was right as, you know, startups were really moving from hardware companies to tech software companies. It was at a time, so it was 96. It was at a time where Microsoft was considered the evil empire to the Bay Area. And my company at that time was a big partner of Microsoft. I had a company called Front Office Technologies, which we basically built it. We made a Microsoft Exchange look like a document management system is what it was. And so, you know, I kind of went through that early part as it converted over to software. And then, you know, and went through the time in 98 to 2001 where it was an amazing time in the market. You know, it's like people with virtually no business model at all were getting massive amounts of money. It was a little bit like it had been over the last 2 years here in AI. I mean, the amount of money you can raise is just massive. And so we ended up, I had two companies during that cycle and it was really good. And I think that what happened was after that 2000 timeframe, the founders got a lot smarter. And I think both in terms of how you run a business and things to that effect, but also how do you negotiate with these investors and work with the investors that way. And so I think it was good for everybody. I think the ecosystem that we have in San Francisco and now is really expanded throughout the country is an amazing ecosystem. And you know, I first started raising money, you know, you'd be lucky if you could raise $200,000 worth of angel money. And you know, in this company, I raised $5 million in angel money. In my last company, I raised $10 million in angel money. So in my Series A that I'm going to do in this company, I'm actually doing with an investment bank. We're kind of skipping over the top of VCs. And I think that's going to be another trend. You know, that as the angels move up, the investment banks are moving down. And you know, they're really putting their bets on founders with a lot of experience.
So doing those raises, I think a lot of times people don't realize that as you're starting out as a CEO of a startup that a lot of your time is spent working with investors and people that are, give a little bit of your thoughts, just some tips that you would give somebody who is maybe thinking about doing something like that.
Yeah, you know, I've been real lucky and then I've got some very, very good investors in my career. You know, people I really, you know, cared about me and I cared about them. And, you know, and I think that's one of the real, there has to be a sync there of working with your investors. The other piece of it is like, you got to communicate with your investors. I'm now kind of sit on both sides of the table and that I do a lot of personal investment in early stage companies. And then I raise big money for my own companies. And so I sit on both sides and some of the, you know, early investments I make, I mean, I don't hear from them at all. You know, it's like the only time they hear from me is when they want more money. And, you know, my company, I'm very good about making sure my investors know what's going on. And so I think that's one of the real key parts of it. And it's the reason I've got a number of investors that invest in that company and then they turn around and invest in this company and then they turn around and invest in this company. You don't treat your investors well, that won't happen to you. And I have the same thing with, you know, employees following me from company to company as well. So, but I think that's what's key. The big part of it is, though, there's just a lot of money in the market right now. You know, it's like, I mean, orders of magnitude more than it was in 98, 99 timeframe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where you can raise many, many angels are investing in the, you know, hundred thousands is pretty normal. Now writing checks of $1 million as an angel and more. I mean, my last company I got funded was, you know, I had an investor put a $3 million, write a $3 million check. One guy write a $3 million check. Hmm.
So when you're thinking about during this time that we're going through a lot of turmoil, maybe somebody who's in a startup, what advice would you give them during this turmoil? What are the things that they should be doing?
Yeah, we just went through it. So, you know, very first thing, respond very quickly. And if you're going to have to make hard decisions, make them right now. And and we were in a lucky position and that we needed to drop the burn because I wanted to have 18 months worth of runway, but we were able to drop that burn to 18 months without having to lay off anybody. But you know, you've got to make that decision, or what'll happen is you'll tail off on the other end and you'll lay off everybody. And so you have to go, can I make the company to the next level where I can raise money? And I just went through a conference on Friday where they were talking about this, and they brought some experts in saying, you know, how long is this going to last? And they were saying, you know, we should be where China is at the end of June, you know, where you've had 4 to 5 days and no one's got the disease, got the virus anymore. And that means it's going to push clear through August before people are, or through July before, because you can't come back immediately. You have to wait for a while before you can come back after that happens. And everybody's saying like 3 or 4 weeks. And so that means it's going to be like August before people are going to come back. And then when they come back, you got to glue your business back together. I mean, this isn't just hard on startups. This is hard on everybody. Mm-hmm. And it's going to take a while to reassess and what you're, you know, build out your strategy. So I think it's going to be October before business is going on the upward cycle, you know, and I don't think it'll be back by that time, but it's going to be that kind of number. So how can you turn your business around and make it so it can thrive in that kind of market? You know, it may be for some of these companies, it's best just to stop for a while and, you know, go into a steady state and just stop. You know, what's so hard about that is there's no alternative for your people, you know, and that's sad. You know, you're in a situation where you lay someone off right now, they're gone for a while. They have no income for a while. I think that makes it really, really difficult.
Do you think there's some opportunity for companies that are able to continue to move forward during this time?
I think in our situation, we're in real good opportunities. So a couple mm-hmm. things we've done. So we were selling AI to large enterprise. So that market, budgets are frozen. You know, I could individually reach out and talk to people, but I can't get 10 people together to make a decision. That's just not going to happen. I think it's October before that's going to happen. So we made a big pivot and said, okay, let's take our product and let's move it so that we can do a personal brain and sell it online to what we call B2P, business to professionals. Mm-hmm. So I got my tech team together. That's the first pivot we made. Let's do that because we can sell that way. Now, one of the things that happens, although sales is impossible, marketing is really good right now. Our marketing is up about 30%. Because people are at home watching LinkedIn and Facebook.
Sure.
Spending a lot more time on that. So, you know, we market directly in the feeds, directly with direct messaging on LinkedIn. And that part of it is way up right now. So I think your ability to market on these online things is way better than it ever has been. So if you have a product where you actually can sell that way, I think that's a big benefit. And I think that's why we pivoted the way we did. Another piece of it is, you know, we're going to be doing our Series A in September, October kind of timeframe is the current plan, but sometime in that area. And I think like half the companies that are doing in the Series A stage, I mean, Series Seed stage right now, are just going to go out of business. So that means the number of people trying, good companies trying to get that Series A is going to be a lot less, you know, a lot less competition there. And I think the other piece, and I'm going to do this personally, I think the other piece is this is a great market for investors to invest. You know, you always want to invest in great companies. If you invest in great companies in a bad time or a good time, you're probably going to lose your money. You know, if you invest in a good company in a bad time, you're going to get the most equity for that money. And the people will quickly kind of filter themselves out. So as an investor, you know, I know it feels hard to invest in these times. This is actually a really great time to invest. And if you just go back a couple of times and say, well, you know, what happened in 2003 when we were in this kind of a mess? You know, that's when Airbnb, Uber, Slack, Zoom, those all guys started back then. That's when they invested. The people that came in there made tons of money because
sure.
they invested in the low times. And this is cyclical. It's going to be back. I mean, I think of all the ones I've seen, this one we know is going to come back, you know, and because the economy was very rich and vibrant right prior to the virus. The only reason it fell apart was this. And I think that part of what's going on is, you know, these big companies have big cash reserves right now.
That's good. How are you keeping your team focused? I know they're working virtually. You've got, you know, a big team in India. You've got team here, but they're all sitting in their offices at home. How do you keep them motivated and focused?
Yeah, you know, a couple things. Like, so Friday, we, in our U.S. team, every Friday afternoon, we go through a thing we call Wind Down Fridays. And we typically go to a bar somewhere and, you know, drink wine and just get to know each other personally a little bit. We have a very close team who really cares for each other. That's a neat thing to have. And so we really take advantage of that. So what we did this Friday was a Wind Down Friday online. So we all got in front of Zoom and did exactly the same thing, except we made our own, had our own wine, you know, and sure. It was really nice. It was very, and the entire team loved it. So that was a great piece of it. I think in general, our the cadence that we have and the systems we have was designed for virtual. I mean, we live on Slack. In India, I have like 30 guys sitting in a room together, and they Slack back and forth, you know. Even though they're literally sitting 15 feet from each other, sure. They're Slacking back and forth the whole time. Let me do huddles every single day, and we do them kind of at 9 in the morning. So it's not too late for them, and it's not too early for us. So we've got that. That's our overlap point. We do that on Zoom anyhow, you know, and we run Asana for all of our project management. And so that's we're used to that. That's a real good tool for virtual. So we'd already had it kind of built in. I think most companies do, actually. I think this is something that, you know, we all know how to do scrums. We all know how to do agile development. We know how to collaborate with Slack. I can't imagine what would have happened. You and we were talking about this earlier. I can't imagine what would have happened if this would have happened in 1995 instead of in 2020. Right. Yep. You know, we didn't have these tools, and you know, Zoom's just like being there. I think, you know, it's an amazing tool that I use. I mean, I don't know how I'd run my organization without Zoom.
So what other technologies you mentioned, Asana and yeah. Anything else that, and Slack you've, anything else that you can't live without?
Well, you know, we have a portal that we built on it that, you know, every day we've got, you know, like one of the things I have in my business, we have values. Our values spell out the word smart. And then for every one of our values, like S is service oriented, we have 5 behaviors that we want you to demonstrate to show that you're service oriented. So, you know, I use a portal every morning that, you know, it changes. What's the fundamental we're going to focus on today? And so every one of our huddles starts with, you know, what's our fundamental for today? We go through it and go, how are we going to change today based on that fundamental? So we use our portal for that. And I think that's a real important tool to use. Communications is real important. I just talked with my team, and you know, one thing we miss is that as we're together, we have a very open office. You know, everybody sits in one room, and I like that.
Sure.
And I'm like, I miss that. I miss seeing you guys all the time, just seeing there. And so we found a product called Puka Team, and Puka Team basically, it kind of looks like the gallery of Zoom. It has like,
okay, sure.
I think you put 12 people in it, but what it's doing is like it's every 15 seconds taking a picture of everybody, so it feels like you're all together. Huh. And so we're going to test it out Wednesday to see how it ends up working. But, you know, isolation becomes, when you send people home, it becomes one of the core pieces of it, you know. Right. And I've got several single people that work for me. And, you know, it's one thing, I'm married, and my kids come over, live near me and stuff. And so we don't face it as much. But, you know, if you're single and you can't go anywhere, that isolation becomes a big demotivating factor to you. Mm-hmm. So we're going to try that out and see if that will help, you know, in that those situations. You know, everything we do is in the cloud. Our accounting system's in the cloud. We use HubSpot for our marketing systems in the cloud. We use Box for our document systems in the cloud. You know, everything we do is sitting in the cloud. Right. I mean, if I completely lost my computer, it would take me about 15 minutes to get a new computer in here to run just like my other one did, you know, because sure. Everything I have is in the cloud.
Yeah, it's yeah. Well, let me know how that that new thing works. It that way it will capture. And I've heard people say that with their offices, they're just leaving Zoom on virtually and just having the people kind of feel like they at least hear the background noise. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about we've talked in the past a little bit about your nonprofit and some of the work that you're doing, and I found it fascinating. Just the kind of the entrepreneurial thing that you've brought into an environment to help those that are in need. Talk a little bit about that and tell people about that.
Yeah. Well, I read a book probably 5 years ago, 10 years ago, something like that. It was called Halftime. It was about a guy that had been quite successful in the front part of his career and wanted to do something significant in the back part of his career. So I was kind of going through that mode, turning 50, you know, and at the time, and said, I need to focus on this. This is something I want to do. And so I actually went to through a program called the Master's Program that kind of teaches people how to do that. And as I'm in the middle of it, I came with what I wanted, you know, something I was passionate about. So I grew up as a product of a single mom and mom that worked when she worked all day long, and then she went to college in that evening. And then when she got home, she was going to college to be a court reporter. So she'd take, she'd transcribe meetings for people in the evening. So she was working probably 18 hours a day. And so I said, I want to do something with single moms. So I found another guy in exactly the same situation that he had his single mom. And it's one of the things that people tend to be quite passionate about when you've been through that situation. So what we're building is a community. It's right outside of Shingle Springs, which if you go to Sacramento and then start heading towards the mountains on Highway 50, it's right before you get to Placerville. We've got 30 acres and we're going to build 30 homes. They're all made out of shipping containers. We had an architect come in and design them for us, and they're just beautiful. It's kind of like twice the width of a shipping container because there's an outside area as well. And they're 40-foot shipping containers. And so we're building that out. But what we're doing is instead of it just being a living area, we're doing what we call an accelerator. And so it's a 5-year program. And I'm going to, a bunch of startups that are not startups, but tech companies that need customer support. And in the Bay Area, customer support is one of the hardest places, things to find good customer support. So what we're going to do is, you know, we'll bring the women in. They'll stay at the home. Most of them will have kids. We'll train them how to go into customer support. Mm-hmm. And over a 5-year period, we'll teach them how to do leadership and customer support and then put them back into the market. And in the market, someone who leads customer support, that's $150,000 to $180,000 a year position. Mm-hmm. And you know, most of the women we're getting will be coming in, you know, they work at Safeway and they Uber at night or they do Instacart at night to make things and maybe make $48,000 a year, which is not sustainable in the Bay Area at all. And so that's what we're putting together. And the objective is to kind of open source the project. So when we get all done, we tell everybody how we put it all together. We're going to build a briefing center at the place so people can come in. And if you want to build one of these in Tulsa, Oklahoma or Newark, New Jersey, you know, everybody has this issue. And we're supposed to take care of widows and orphans. And in today's market, widows and orphans aren't people where the husband has died at war. Mm-hmm. It's people where the husband's walked away from the family. So it's, you know, really focusing on that.
Yeah, it sounds like there's been a great reception in the Bay Area and from the tech companies that you've talked to. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about is there a way that somebody, if they were interested in getting involved as far as they could learn more about that project?
Yeah, kind of 4 ways. If you go to inspire-village.org, that's our website. And if you go to it, it'll describe all the different components to it. But we're doing a couple things. So we're raising some donations, and my co-founder and I are each putting $1 million into this thing. So we're putting that together, and then we're bringing in, building out the infrastructure. And then what we're going to do is have companies come in and build the homes, kind of like you do with Habitat for Humanity, if you're not familiar with that. So in a week-long program, you build out the home. So when you get there, the shipping container's already been cut and reinforced. So when you cut a hole in a shipping container, a lot of its strength comes from the metal, the sheet metal itself. And when you cut a hole in that sheet metal, it breaks its structure. So you have to build in rebar, weld in rebar to keep that structure going. So it's already done. And then the walls are made outside the shipping container and in jigs, and they're lifted up and dropped down in the shipping container. Mm-hmm. And so you build the entire thing in a week and put it together in a week. And then, so we're getting companies to do that. So the companies would actually raise, it costs $35,000 for one of these homes. They'd raise the money for the $35,000 and the people would come in and build it. And, you know, this home might be the Cisco home and this one might be the, you know, Airbnb home, whatever. So that's the concept. And then the third area is, we're looking for people who need customer support positions. And so we've got both my partner and I, we both have great contacts in these big companies. So it won't be hard for us to end up finding this. And this is something that's really sought after in the Bay Area anyhow. But, you know, we see this as a self-fulfilling. I do a lot of, you know, contribution in this area. And a lot of these charities that you go to, it's like you put all the money in and the next year they come out and ask you for the same amount of money. You know, and you just keep having to fill in the hole. In this situation, we fill in the hole one time and it makes money from that point on. And it's one of those things where it's completely self-running once we get it up and going.
Very cool. Yeah. I'm excited to see how that that develops, and definitely encourage people if they're interested in learning more. And it'd be great if it was started there and continue to grow around the country.
There's a similar thing down in Austin, Texas for homeless people. And I went down there to their briefing and saw their briefing, and they've got their thing up to like 500 people now, something like that. And there's like, I think there's 2 million people in Austin. There's 1,200 homeless people, and they've housed 500 of them.
Wow.
So you can really make an impact. This is something that's, you know, you can really make a major impact by providing this kind of thing. And, you know, there's been no crime at the place. It's incredibly clean. You know, it's really a neat thing that they've done. And then the people at the homeless in Austin, they go out into the community and do with food trucks and feed all the rest of the homeless.
Very, very neat. Yeah. It's cool to see that entrepreneurial, as I said, spirit kind of, think about things differently. How can you make a lasting, impact? Tell me a little bit, you mentioned the Halftime Book, and I've met, Bob Buford when he was, alive and very familiar with that organization and any other books that have made an impact.
Well, yeah, a bunch of them. So, you know, I've got probably my favorite one was actually from like, I think they made it in 94 with that Crossing the Chasm. Mm-hmm. And all of my companies have followed that pattern. That was one of the key things I turned into. And I think everything he's got in there is the same now as it was then. And there's a new book out that's called Play Bigger is the name. And what essentially they did, they looked at that thing and they said, at Crossing the Chasm, and said, what does it look like in a world where we have 300 unicorns? You know, and how do you create unicorns this way? So, but the same concept. So I'd say that was probably one of the biggest ones in mine. Good to Great is one of the things I've always focused on. I think many founders have seen that as kind of a way that they want to run their businesses. And then the last one I would say is a book called Scaling Up by Vern Harnish. It was one of those things. I don't think there's a single thing in Scaling Up that I didn't already read someplace, but he put it in a way that is like all very well orchestrated, and it's got a process associated with it. I would highly recommend anybody that's building a business to read Scaling Up. There's tons of really good stuff in there. So those are three books that have really impacted me. And, you know, Halftime from a personal standpoint is
sure.
So
good. Outside of, you mentioned you like to be outdoors. Outside of work, what else do you do to recharge?
Well, I'm a big outdoors person. So like every month I have what I call National Jack Day. And in National Jack Day, I live, you know, in Pleasanton, which is right near, my office is in Pleasanton, and right near, you know, the Sierras. So on National Jack Day, I go to the Sierras. I've got a 120-pound German Shepherd, and I put him in the car, and we take off. And I just love hiking up in the Sierras. A lot of times I go over to Yosemite or up to Tahoe, but that's my big thing. I can't center myself in any place better than that. Mm. So I do that. My wife and I travel a lot. My business brings me all over the world, and my wife gets to travel with me. And I'm very, very close to my kids, and I've got 3 grandkids now. So I spend a lot of time with my grandkids and my kids, and I just love them to death. Both my daughters are in the tech industry, and my oldest daughter works for WeWork, and my youngest daughter works for Instacart. So love working them, kind of mentoring them in their own careers.
Very cool. So what parting advice would you give a leader during this time?
During this time. So, you know, I think first I said earlier.
Or in general.
I said, you know, in this time, it's, you know, if you're going to have to move quickly. You know, that's one of the key things. You know, from a bigger standpoint, I think that, you know, develop something, get into a position where you really love what you're doing and you're passionate about what you're doing. It's too hard to work any other way. No, it's not worth, if you don't really enjoy doing a startup like this, it's not worth it if your passion's not in there. Mm-hmm. So in all of my situations, this, you know, when I've done something I personally was very passionate about. It helped me do what I want to do. And so I enjoyed it. I had this vision of how I wanted my own life to change and was able to create that. And so I think that's a big part of it. And, when I first started my, career, I had a very good job. I was working for a company called Kansas Power and Light, a big utility company, and was doing computer work with them. And, it was very clear that I could have a really good career with that company. And I decided I want to do my first startup. And I went to my dad and I said, what should I do here? And he goes, well, you know, if you don't chase your dreams, you're never going to catch them. And so I totally believe in that. You know, it's like you have to go after your dream. It doesn't just come to you.
Sure.
So I think that's one of the big things. Keep it, do something with passion, do something that you really enjoy and care for.
Great.
And then the other part of it, I think, is do it with people you care for and people that you enjoy being around, and because you're going to spend a lot of time with your investors and a lot of time with your team, and you know, just do that with people who you really appreciate and enjoy being with.
Great. Well, Jack, this has been a lot of fun, and definitely enjoyed our conversation and your thoughts, especially at this time, I will be appreciated by those that are listening, and wish you continued success in your career as you're building some pretty interesting things in AI as well as your nonprofit. Wish you success in that.
Well, thank you a lot, Mark. I appreciate it too.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.